Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning, Kristen M., Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune Editorial Board. Kristen, welcome.
It's K-Mac. You can just...
K-Mac.
You can just go with K-Mac, yeah.
That's like very NBA.
Is it?
Yeah. I like that, though.
It's all I got.
Like CP3, K-Mac. Mm-hmm. All right, K-Mac. Nice handle. Nice radio handle.
Thank you.
You're becoming a real pro with this.
I want to hear it at every intro. Sitting in for Amy Jacobson today is K-Mac.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, how diggity.
It's very Eric and Kathy of us.
Yeah, that is a street. There's nothing more street than Eric and Kathy, so... Congratulations to you. And it's also in keeping with Kay West's visit to the White House.
How about it?
Kanye West, Chicago's very own. Jim Brown, the legend, visited Donald Trump for lunch. But prior to lunch, they had a little confab with the media present, about 25 minutes of banter, kind of setting the table for lunch, what would be on the the agenda for discussion, I suppose. Kanye West. Kanye West.
Are you
West.
A fan? Not really.
No, I'm not.
You ain't saying you a gold digger. But I am messing with no broke.
Yeah. Yeah, hi. Okay, take it easy, K-Mac. let's work into that.
Every time you bring up his name, I'm just going to do that little rendition.
Right. No, I understand people steal Ray Charles' music and then make money on it. I got it. Yeah. No, I understand how the music business works. Donald Trump opened the meeting with, this little ditty.
Kanye, it's great to be with you. And these are two friends of mine, and Kanye has been a friend of mine for a long time. And Jim came out of nowhere, and he said... I like what the president's doing. A long time ago, we met, right? And I just appreciate it very much. And, you know, if you look at the employment numbers, if you look at the median income, if you look at every single indicator, we're keeping our promise, Jim. Thank you.
And then once the niceties were exchanged, Kanye West took over the meeting, and sanity was not seen again for 25 minutes. It started with a discussion about pardoning people in prison, specifically Chicago's very own Larry Hoover, who is the founder of the Gangster Disciples street gang, serving 6 consecutive life sentences in a supermax prison in Colorado, and Kanye wants him out.
Really, the reason why they imprisoned him is because he started doing positive for the community. He started showing that he actually had power, that he wasn't just one of a monolithic voice, but he could wrap people around. So there's theories that there's infinite amounts of universe and there's alternate universe. So it's very important for me to get Hoover out, because in an alternate universe, I am him. And I have to go and get him free, because he was doing positive inside of Chicago, just like how I'm moving back to Chicago. And it's not just about, you know, getting on stage and being an entertainer and having a monolithic voice that's forced to be a specific party. You know, people expect that if you're black, you have to be Democrat. I've had conversations that basically said that welfare is the reason why a lot of black people end up being Democrat. They say, you know, first of all, it's a limit to amount of jobs. So the fathers lose the jobs, and they say, we'll give you more money for having more kids in your home. And then we got rid of the mental health institutes in the 80s and the 90s, and the prison rates just shot up. And now you have Chirac, what people call Chirac.
So which part of that would you like to tackle, K-Mac?
Okay, let's start with Larry Hoover. Like you said, I think serving basically a life sentence. But is it strange of me to quote Gator Bradley, who was...
Wallace Gator Bradley?
Yes, who is also a reformed, I think, gangster disciple who gets involved in political campaigns here in Chicago. And he makes a case that when the gang leaders were pulled off of the streets, like Larry Hoover, that is when chaos developed and there was no more discipline.
Yeah, I understand this.
Okay.
I understand the argument.
All right.
I understand the argument. I understand that, yes, I guess if you have a kingpin and you have certain rules and those rules are enforced by somebody with the standing to enforce them, that you could have less violence. But isn't that also ceding control of the streets to, you know, a drug-dealing, gang-banging gang leader who murders people? And, oh, by the way, you know, I know this is this fantasy of, hey, they're just killing each other, these gangbangers. Except that's not actually true, because innocent people are routinely caught in the crossfire, not to mention it makes it impossible to even conceive of ever revitalizing those neighborhoods, because nobody's going to locate to places that are gang controlled.
Okay, so why do you think Kanye...
So Larry Hoover was doing positive things. I mean,
I don't know. Okay, let's move on.
No. I won't move on, because Kanye wouldn't move on. He went on for another 15 minutes, but he ultimately got back to Larry Hoover.
Larry Hoover is an example of a man that was turning his life around. And as soon as he tried to turn his life around, they hit him with 6 life sentences. So
yeah.
I believe he's with, you say don't tear down the statues. Larry Hoover is a living statue. He's a beacon for us that needs to see his family, that needs to go out and represent.
Yeah, Larry Hoover is a beacon. The founder of the Gangster Disciples, let me just reset the table here. He's a beacon. He was turning his life. He was an honor student turning his life around, and then they hit him with 6 life sentences. That's not exactly how it went down, you won't be surprised to learn, but really focused on Larry Hoover was Kanye West. And then he had some things to say about liberals. And then he had some things to say about welfare. And then he had some things to say about the
Air
power.
Air Force One.
Well, that's got to get replaced by this hydrosonic plane. That he had a schematic right there on his phone.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think was actually going on in the president's mind while this sort of stream of consciousness was being dumped on his desk?
Yeah, I think he was saying, I like the cut of this guy's jib.
Yeah. This is why we click.
What was he saying? He said, hey, you know, you want to speak at one of my rallies? You can speak at one of my rallies.
We're gonna discuss. I didn't mean to put you on blast
okay.
like that, bro. But it's definitely...
Hey, I'm open-minded. I'm here.
Yeah.
Mr. President, would you like him to speak at one of your rallies?
He can speak for me anytime he wants. He's been a great guy. He's smart cookie.
Yeah.
Smart cookie. He gets it. Yeah. These two guys, Jim smart Brown, cookie. He's been... doing this for a long time.
Yeah. Well, Jim Brown is a different story.
Could very well be.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just so weird. They had the press pool. So the press pool are not the individual reporters. There's maybe one or two that transcribe everything that happens.
Jonathan Carl was there.
Oh, he was?
He wanted a front row seat for this show.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, the transcription from the pool reporters, you get it as a member of the media. I mean, you would have thought it was a joke. But it, in fact, was not.
Well, we'll have to get to the power of Kanye's MAGA hat, the editorial suggestion he has for the MAGA hat, the Super Bowl idea he has, his idea about the 13th Amendment, the results of various tests on his mental capacity. We'll get into the details about his plan for the new Air Force One, the hydrogen-powered new Air Force One.
I know what they had for lunch.
His deal with Adidas. We'll get to all of
and the
that.
Menu. I have the menu for you. Stay tuned.
The question is, the legitimate question, because there's an interesting piece in the Washington Examiner I want you to think about, take calls from our friends, does Kanye West actually present as off-center? Is that generous? Off-center as he is, does he present a real political opportunity for Trump?
that no other Republican could capitalize and that other Republicans don't see. 312-642-5600, turnkey.provincialline. We'll take your calls.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
I'm living in that 21st century, doing something mean to it. Do it better than anybody you ever seen do it. Screams from the haters, got a nice ring to it. I guess every superhero need his theme music. No one man should have all that.
Dan and in for Amy J this morning is K-Mac.
That's right.
As she's known on the
rap world.
Yeah. This piece from Keith Koffler in Washington Examiner, WashingtonExaminer.com. Republicans who are mainly white and seem to mostly regard black neighborhoods as places to drive through with the doors locked on the way out of town were by and large probably as aghast at West, Kanye West, as anyone, assuming they knew who he was. Yeah, okay. Little wonder that it took President Trump, also routinely derided as off his meds, or at least desperately in need of some, to have the originality to recognize the value of what happened and invite West to the building, mocked in recent bestsellers as its own kind of psych ward, the White House. Kanye's journey to the GOP is frighteningly lonely, given the worlds he comes from, black America and the arts community, and there is an opportunity that he's presenting to the GOP to make a better, stronger, more consistent appeal to black voters in this country. Trump is seizing it, and those who are just sort of analyzing, and he needs it, Kanye West, in a clinical sense, are missing the point. You agree with that? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Or do you think, you know, Kanye West is just all bound up with all sorts of challenges and is sort of an unhelpful or irrelevant sideshow?
No, I don't think he's an irrelevant sideshow. I think if they could get him to focus on a few points, namely how Democratic policies have not worked. He talked a little bit about Chicago and violence here. I mean, this idea, he was, so this is someone who was raised by a single mother who was a Chicago State University professor. He went to a special school in Oak Lawn that was not a private school, but it kind of had a private school feel. He did very well. He went to college for a few years. So this is not someone who's just uneducated. I think he's just sort of having this birth as it relates to politics, and if you could get him on some of those talking points that would resonate with black voters, he could be really effective. I mean, his audience is huge.
Mike in Crown Point, Indiana, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. I think the presentation by Kanye is not so much important as his presence and who he brings as an audience. The litmus test for me is how crazy the liberal media is going over this, trying to disrupt and destroy him. They're afraid of him. They've lost a lot of black voters to the Republicans in 2016. They stand to lose a lot more. So I wouldn't get too wrapped up about, you know, some of his more outrageous ideas. The point is, he's got ideas. And if we're going to, you know, look at supposed professional politicians and experts, I'd give you a laundry list of ridiculous ideas
that
cost this country billions and trillions of dollars.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Thanks for the call, Mike. I just wish I would have heard a little bit more from Jim Brown and a little bit less from Kanye. But that's me. I'm an old fuddy-duddy. What do I know?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, K-Mac, Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune editorial board. And Kristen, I'm sure you've had time to see the pictures or look at some of the drone footage that's been posted online of the devastation inflicted by Hurricane Michael on Mexico Beach, specifically the Florida Panhandle generally. Why don't we get an update on just exactly where things stand and how the cleanup effort goes? To help us do that, we're pleased to be joined by Fox News correspondent Jonathan Seary, who is in Florida. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning to you. I'm on Panama City Beach. We were actually here when the storm made landfall, and now we're here as crews come in and try and clean up the damage. We're still in the dark, and we're also with limited water at our hotel. Just basic things that you take for granted are not there. And then some of the harder hit areas, utility companies are warning that it could be weeks before they have power restored. People are eager to get back. Those who evacuated yesterday, we saw long lines of just standstill traffic for miles, people trying to get back into the Panama City area. But authorities are reluctant to let people back in. They're urging evacuees to stay put. They say that it's too dangerous to come back in. As we drive through the roads, we're seeing down trees and power lines. It's especially dangerous at dark. So for those who are already here, police are enforcing a mandatory dusk to dawn curfew just in hopes of preventing needless accidents.
Just going back to what you said about the power outage and how long it may take for power to be restored, the number I saw was something like 800,000 people without power. Is that a ballpark figure?
Yeah, that's talking about the entire southeast region. What's really interesting is I'm looking at the updated numbers, and the total power outages in Florida is about 351,000 customers. And then I look at the figures for North Carolina, they're actually higher at 430,000. So even though this storm was well downgraded, no longer a hurricane, by the time it moved into the Carolinas, it wreaked havoc there, knocking down trees, causing flooding. In fact, there's been some high water rescues going on, multiple ones taking place up in the mountain portions of the state. And then power outages going on all over Georgia, the Carolinas, and Virginia. And so this storm system has been incredibly damaging, first as a Category 4 hurricane. In fact, the strongest hurricane that has struck Florida's panhandle in recorded history, and then as a much more downgraded tropical system going through the rest of the southeast.
Jonathan, can you update us on the death toll? I think last I saw it was somewhere around 7. Has that risen?
Yeah, I haven't heard of any additional deaths beyond that figure, but I know that one of the most recent deaths occurred in North Carolina. It was a tree that fell on a man, and they're attributing that to storm conditions that caused that tree to topple.
What's the story with supplies down there for people who've been displaced because of the hurricane?
Yeah, the both state and federal governments are coming in with large amounts of water, food. Emergency generators are coming in from both public and private sources, and so a lot of supplies are coming in. In fact, we went to a grocery store that had recently reopened after the storm, and we were pleasantly surprised that there was plenty of water being stocked. There were a lot of perishable items that they were not allowed to sell because when the power goes out, of course, there's the risk of contamination. But other food items, non-perishables and water, were in good supply. So it seems like there's a good supply chain going. They are bringing in fuel to the area. And the main issue now is just getting the power back on to get those gas pumps working, to get the lights on in people's houses, and then clearing the roadways so that people can get back in and inspect their homes and businesses.
Do you have a sense for what percentage of people actually did evacuate? And for those who didn't, do you have a sense for kind of why people stay during storms like this?
Yeah, I don't have an exact percentage figure in terms of how many people stayed, but anecdotally, I'll tell you that we've covered many hurricanes in this part of the panhandle before, and ordinarily you would see restaurants trying to stay open till the last minute, shut down just before the hurricane makes landfall, and then immediately reopen. We had a hard time finding a place to eat. We found one pizza place on the island that was open the day before the storm arrived, and then it closed that evening. And then FEMA, often goes by this unofficial Waffle House index.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You can tell how serious a disaster is depending on what level of service the Waffle House is giving or if it's closed altogether. During the storm, all of the Waffle Houses on the island were closed. And then just yesterday, one Waffle House reopened. It was serving a limited menu, what it calls its emergency menu, and it was taking cash only. So that's an idea of the level of emergency that we're facing. It seemed that residents took this storm much more seriously than previous storms. When we first arrived, it was a ghost town. Almost all of the businesses were closed. Very little activity on the island. And now, because people can't get back in, there's still very little activity, other than the people who stayed. It's still higher than what authorities would have liked, but I believe much lower than what we've seen in previous storms.
What's the handle from public health experts there about public health concerns? I mean, in the wake of these devastating events, you have concerns about contaminated water that can lead to cholera, hepatitis A. Also, specifically to that area, the stories about the red tide maybe making its way inland because of the hurricane.
Wow, you've really done your homework. When we arrived here, we went out, but before the storm arrived, we went out to the beach to just check on water conditions, and we started gagging. And then we realized, oh, that's the red tide. And we've covered the red tide on previous stories, but we were so focused on the hurricane, we forgot that there's this second disaster going on at the same time. And marine biologists say that the storm system may either help or hurt the red tide problem. It may push the red tide back out to sea, or it could cause more fertilizer runoff, more nutrients going into the Gulf and causing the red tide to get even worse. So the jury's out on what's going to happen with the red tide. As far as the water, we're under a boil water advisory right now. Just out of an abundance of caution, they believe that as water treatment plants have gone down with the lack of power, with the flooding, with potential backwash, they want people to, they're recommending that people use bottled water. But if you don't have bottled water, bring your tap water to a boil. But many parts of this island are having issues with tap water because of the lack of electricity. In our hotel, we have a slight trickle on the first floor and no water above the first floor because of the lack of power.
Was there something that was distinguishable about this hurricane than others in this same area, whether it was wind or mount or duration? What was different about this hurricane?
The rapid intensification. On Sunday, we were alerted that there was a tropical system in the Gulf that had the potential to form into a hurricane. We came down to the panhandle expecting a tropical storm or maybe a Category 1 hurricane. Very quickly, the forecast changed to a Category 3. And then shortly before landfall, it had strengthened to a Category 4, and we were worried that it might go up to a Cat 5. So the rapid intensification is what made this storm system so unusual. We had come from the North Carolina coast covering Hurricane Florence. And with that storm, it actually had started out as a much stronger storm, came ashore as a Category 1 hurricane. But what made it so devastating was it was so slow moving. It dumped all of this rain, first on the coast, then inland, causing rivers to crest and all of this epic flooding. And so that was more of a rain event. This is a much more fast-moving system, moving out of the area very quickly, but because of its intensity, the wind is causing all of this damage. But once again, the heavy rains as it moved into the Carolinas, going over already saturated ground, caused even more flooding to a place already impacted by flooding.
He is Jonathan Seery, a Fox News correspondent who's on the ground in Florida. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. Very helpful. Appreciate it.
Be safe.
Anytime. My pleasure.
And you join us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
and hit me like a hurricane.
Dan and K-Mac in for Amy J.
Right.
Yeah.
Scottish.
Are you going to watch Melania's interview tonight at ABC News?
I am, yes. I've been reading all the teases, yeah. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
They teased out a few more bites from the wide-ranging, reportedly, interview of Melania Trump. We've played them over the last couple of days. The Q&As they tweeted out yesterday have to do with Melania Trump and whether or not there are people in the West Wing that she doesn't trust and the president shouldn't trust. A little palace intrigue.
Mm. Has he had people that you didn't trust working for him?
Yes.
Did you let him know?
I let him know.
And what did he do?
Well, some people, they don't work there anymore. And it's very difficult sometimes because I'm so busy with my office, I don't get involved with West Wing.
Do you think there's still people there that he can't trust?
Yes.
Still working now?
Yes.
Does one of them resemble Ex Machina? Does one of them sound like Emo Phillips?
I think it's Ivanka. Haven't they always had a very tense relationship?
Melania asked if she's looking forward to a re-election run for her husband.
I believe that my husband is doing an incredible job for this nation. And I want that American people have a success. So whatever he will decide, I will support him.
But are you looking forward to it?
I'm enjoying it. I really love to live in the Washington and in the White House. And, yes, I'm enjoying it.
No, you're not.
She practiced that over and over to get it just right. She is miserable.
You think so?
No, I don't think she's miserable. But I think she talks, I think, in this interview about how she had to get accustomed to just the constant criticism and the bullying and the mob. And so I think it's been a rough go for her.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's partly true. I think she's from the bites they've played so far, she's rising in my estimation. I think she's very restrained. I think she's thoughtful. I think she's prepared to answer any question because there were no questions that were off limits, according to ABC News, for this interview, because she's thought a lot about this. I think she's, you know, I like her. I think she's very poised. And it's speaking of what you were saying in terms of being criticized and getting used to living in the glass menagerie, why she took up the issue of cyberbullying.
I could say I'm the most bullied person on the world.
You think you're the most bullied person in the world?
One of them, if you really see what people saying about me. That's why I, you know, my Be Best initiative is focusing on social media and online behavior. We need to educate the children of social emotional behavior so when they grow up and they know how to deal with those issues.
She is. I mean, I can't. She's certainly up there in terms of who gets bullied. From the moment he started running, the criticism over her clothing, her outfit choices, her parenting when she decided to stay in New York for a little while until they transitioned to Washington, D.C. I mean, it has just been relentless.
Well, right. Relentless. And anybody associated with Trump, obviously, is going to be vilified by the entire D.C. press corps and all their outposts across the fruited plains and the other cultural elites in Hollywood and elsewhere. Mm-hmm.
And she's been very private, to your point.
Yes.
I appreciate that she's been so restrained and a very private first lady.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning, K-Mac.
That's right. But there's my street name.
Shouldn't it be K-Mick because there's no A.
The original spelling of Macquarie is Macquarie, Scottish. M-A-C-Q-U-A-R-R-I-E. So no, K-Mac is actually appropriate.
Och, 'tis a mighty pottle of puke.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right, lad. It reminds me why I got into this business.
Is
what is that? I really don't know.
That's groundskeeper Willie.
Who's he?
Groundskeeper Willie from The Simpsons. Oh, also
from
Scottish.
The Simpsons. Okay. I only know of Shrek.
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 The Simpsons has been on since you were a toddler.
No, I watched The Simpsons. I didn't realize there was a Scottish groundskeeper.
Nerd!
That is perfect, though. Yeah. A pretty face suits the dish clute. You'll hear
something. If elected mayor, my first act will be to kill the whole lot of you and burn your turn to cinders.
Yeah.
Okay.
Groundskeeper Willie.
It works. Clan Macquarie.
Kanye West, what's the name of his shoe again? Yee? Zee? What is it?
Yee, I think.
Yeezy?
And
it lights up?
We are so not hip.
What's the deal with those shoes that light up? What with the kids and their shoes with the lights?
Can we get Justin in here to please help us in this segment?
I've been paying attention. The NBA won't use his shoes because they're distracting.
What's his latest album named?
I don't know. That's because I have taste, not because I don't know who Kanye West is. I've heard his songs.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Name a couple. Mr. White Golfer over there.
Gold Digger.
Yeah, I helped you out with that one earlier.
Yeah. I'm more of a Chance the Rapper guy now.
We want prenup.
Yeah, Chance is all Quran.
I'm trying to get on board with Chance.
Yeah, I'm not. So here's the thing. Look, you have your concerns. I'm concerned about the Lyric Opera strike. I want that settled.
Right. It's going to disrupt your weekend.
Well, I have plans to see La Boheme, and I'm not going to go see it with scabs, right?
You're going to have to cross. Yeah. You're going to have to cross the picket line.
All right. So Kanye is at the White House, Jim Brown in tow. And remember, this is how this lunch meeting was characterized by the dumbest man on television. That would be Don Lemon.
Kanye West is what happens when Negroes don't read. And we have this now, and now Donald Trump is going to use it and pervert it, and he's going to have somebody who can stand with him and take pictures.
That is abominable. That is really awful. I heard that clip earlier, and I mean, he actually went on and said even worse things about Kanye, didn't he? Call him basically like an Uncle Tom.
That's what the left thinks of anybody that breaks from their ranks to engage Republican or conservative, much less to actually formally go over to their side and start chastising liberals. That's how serious people, great intellects like Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams and Bob Woodson have been treated by the left for generations, decades. Mm-hmm. So this is nothing new. It's just, to hear from Don Lemon. Oh, boy.
Maybe he needs to go have some more margaritas. What was he drinking on New Year's Eve?
Oh, he's so drunk. but he's open to a relationship this year.
Oh, please. And he still keeps his job. It's ridiculous.
This is another Chicago export.
Is he? Don Lemon?
He was at NBC5 here.
Huh. For how long?
Too long.
I don't remember that. Well, Kanye's coming back. He brought this up again yesterday with the president. He keeps talking about how he's moving back to Chicago.
He did mention it.
We'll have him on the show.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Maybe if I'll buy a pair of his shoes or I'll buy his hydrogen-powered plane or something like that to ingratiate myself. But here's the thing with Don Lemon. I wonder how he would characterize Jim Brown. Did anybody on the panel ask him about Jim Brown? Because Jim Brown was there as well.
Did he speak at all, though? I know you've brought this up, but I don't.
Actually, Jim Brown speaks sparingly. And when he does, listen up. You know why? Because Jim Brown is talking.
Well, you know why I'm here? I'm here to serve.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I'm not here to ask for anything. I'm here to contribute.
And that's always been the way Jim has been for a long time.
It's true. So Jim Brown, very understated and dignified, because Jim Brown is a dignified gentleman and who's done, a lot of great work, as AmeriCan program that was discussed in this 25-minute conversation they had before the press gaggle yesterday in the Oval Office. But that was about all the words Jim Brown could get in edgewise, because it was really Kanye's time in the spotlight. And if you've caught bits and pieces of it, you'll hear it right here. Do you take away from Kanye and this relationship he has with Trump? Is this something that we should dismiss, like we would dismiss Taylor Swift saying she's not going to vote for Marsha Blackburn for Senate and you shouldn't either. We dismiss that, right? Should we dismiss Kanye as another celebutante who is not exactly cogent in his thinking or offerings? Or is Kanye some kind of game changer where you can actually enlist him to encourage black voters in particular to think differently about Republicans and the Republican Party? Or is it somewhere in between? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Kanye has some ideas about Trump's branding as well, though he does appreciate the MAGA hat because it's made him a superhero.
You know, they tried to scare me to not wear this hat, my own friends. But this hat, it gives me power in a way. You know, my dad and my mom separated, so I didn't have a lot of male energy in my home. And also, I'm married to a family that, you know, not a lot of male energy going on. It's beautiful, though. But there's times where, you know, it's something about, you know, I love Hillary. I love everyone, right? But the campaign, I'm with her, just didn't make me feel as a guy that didn't get to see my dad all the time, like a guy that could play catch with his son. It was something about when I put this hat on, it made me feel like Superman. You made a Superman. That's my favorite superhero. And you made a Superman cape for me, also as a guy that looks up to you, looks up to Ralph Lauren, looks up to American industry guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if he could just stay focused, if he could stay focused on a couple of points that resonate with black voters, he could be a little bit more useful, I think.
Here's one point.
What I need Saturday Night Live to improve on, or what I need the liberals to improve on, is if he don't look good, we don't look good. This is our president. He has to be the freshest, the flyest planes, the best factories, and we have to make our core be in power. We have to bring jobs into America because our best export is entertainment and ideas. But when we make everything in China and not in America, then we're cheating on our country. And we're putting people in positions to have to do illegal things to end up in a cheapest factory ever, the prison system.
You're going to have to do a better job of connecting dots for me there with his economic theory, but that's really not the point. The point is his direction, and is the direction productive? By the way, he's got some hat ideas, too. He's got a Super Bowl hat idea. You want to hear it? Sure you do.
I made a hat that says Make America Great, just that. But I would love to see, at the Super Bowl, Trump wearing the Make America Great hat, Colin wearing the Make America Great, and showing that we can bend a bit on this side, we can bend a bit on this side, and we can learn how to be malleable in the infinite universe that we are and the loving beings that we are, that we don't have to stick to all traditions. And we aren't a side. We are one unit. We are one country. We are one moment in history and time. We might have been here before, but right now we're here together. And our greatest value that people have are other people.
People who love people, the greatest people. It's like listening to somebody read from a Paulo Coelho novel. You know, I mean, it's just it's like the combination of focus on business. Well, focus, I shouldn't even use that word. The combination of discussions about business, about prison reform, all overlaid with this mysticism. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of hard to follow, but it's wild to listen to.
I can't imagine the pool reporters who were in the room trying to transcribe this to the other reporters who were outside, because they transcribe everything. You know, president steps forward, lifts right hand, shakes hand with Kanye West, and they have to transcribe all this for the other reporters who couldn't be in the room.
Yeah.
But a few months ago, Trump was at some sort of a rally. I think it was the NRA.
Do you think that, by the way, that they transcribed Kanye calling himself a crazy MF-er?
Probably. I think he dropped the N-word a couple times, too, in reference to himself. But President Trump, a few months ago, did credit Kanye for boosting his numbers among African-American voters. I have no idea if that was the actual reason, but Kanye was getting beat up back in May, and Trump went to a National Rifle Association convention, and some polling during that time, his polling numbers doubled. I mean, they were really low, like 11% support among black voters, but they jumped to like 22%.
Well, both,
so maybe he is more potent than we think.
Well, both Jim Brown, actually, the one comment he made about what Kanye had to say, he really liked the Kanye's formulation that if POTUS doesn't look good, we don't look good. And Trump liked that too, of course.
You could hear him in the background. He's like, I get the feeling that Kanye doesn't really get listened to very much at home. This felt like a little bit of couch time. He's every thought that has crossed his mind in the last 12 months and, you know, not having anyone to, like, bounce ideas off at home just sort of gushed out of him.
Then it got a little weird.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
I thought that was... That should have been saved for off camera during lunch. Yeah. Let's take some calls. Bert in Lake Zurich, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for the call. Hey, a couple things about him. He seems a little crazy. I mean, that there's no denying that. But he's not dumb. And the amount of money that he's made and his ability to take such center stage as kind of like a pop icon demonstrates that this guy isn't dumb. And the other thing that strikes me about him is when he talks, he does seem genuine. And if you can kind of interpret this crazy kind of mystical whatever methodology that he has in his talk and actually listen to what he says, that's the difference between what Kanye said yesterday versus Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is, I'm just not voting for the Republican, versus this guy who actually seems to have some kind of answers and a plan and has some kind of backing or some kind of underlying ideology for what he's saying.
Yeah,
so okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for the call, Bert. Kanye, speaking of Kanye's gray matter, well, he talked about it. This is what I said. I mean, Trump must have been...
What didn't he talk about?
Trump must have been listening to this guy and saying, of course he could speak at one of my rallies. This is one of my rallies. This is what I do.
This is me.
This guy's horning in on my act. Listen to Kanye talking about Kanye and how smart he is.
I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I was connected with a neuropsychologist that works with the athletes in the NBA and the NFL. And he looked at my brain. It's equal on three parts. I'm going to go ahead... Drop some bombs for you. 98 percentile IQ test. I had a 75 percentile of all human beings, but it was counting eight numbers backwards off there is repeating. So I'm going to work on that one. The other one's 98% Tesla Freud. You know, so
Tesla Freud,
he
Kanye
said that I actually wasn't bipolar. I had sleep deprivation, which could cause dementia 10 to 20 years from now, where I wouldn't even remember my son's name. So all this power that I get, and I'm taking my son to the Sox game and all that, I wouldn't be able to remember his name from a misdiagnosis. And what we need is we can empower the pharmaceuticals and make more money. That's one thing. I've never stepped into a situation where I didn't make people more money. So we can empower pharmaceuticals. We can empower our industries. We can empower our factories. We can bring not only Adidas on shore, we could bring Foxconn to set up a factory in, I think, Minnesota, 53,000.
Wisconsin.
They have 4,000 jobs, people making $53,000 a year. And one of the things we got to set is Ford to have the highest design, the dopest cars, the most amazing. I don't really say dope. I don't say negative words and try to flip them. We just say positive, lovely, divine, universal words.
Oh, my gosh.
If you listen to that 90-second clip over and over again, that will also cause early onset dementia.
My heart is palpitating. That's hard to listen to. Have you seen the coverage of him, though, when he opened up his phone? And as brilliant as he is and his great IQ, his password is 0000. You watch him hit it on his phone in order to open his stuff.
So. Same password that Mel Brooks has on his luggage, according to Spaceballs. Frank in Villa Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
The thing that's most disheartening is you see all these TV stations and pundits going after him for his mental health, not being able to read and all this other stuff, instead of what this guy's message really was. And I put his message up against Melissa Milano, who is believe all women, white guys are bad. So this guy talked about the Second Amendment. He talked about jobs. He talked, about a lot of stuff about the African American community needing dads at home. His message was much, much stronger than anything I've ever heard from some of these Hollywood pundits on the left.
Well, right, but that's a low bar. But yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I mean, it was embedded in all this other stuff that you've just heard, though.
Yes. I have to keep repeating, though, that he is not uneducated. And so all these people just
not saying that.
No, I know you're not saying that, but I'm hearing all these pundits talk, and even Don Lemon saying, like, he needs to learn how to read. This is someone whose mother was a college professor. He was raised primarily by her. He graduated from what is considered to be kind of a private upper middle income high school in Oak Lawn in the suburbs. I mean, he did go to college for a couple of years. This is not someone who is uneducated, and people are sort of jumping to that. It's kind of bugging me.
You heard of Freud, Tesla, Kanye. And by the way, Freud, he may have been a genius. I don't know what his IQ is. He's a hot mess, too. Freud, please. For another show. I know you're young.
Don't raise your hand at me.
You're
like
a Jungian, right? Is that what you were going to say? Candace in DuPage.
Good morning. I thought one of these parts that was endearing, and I don't know if you guys caught it, but the part where he said that he kind of said something to the tune of a lot of black men, they don't even know, like, how to get started, or, you know, it says something about mentorship, and like, I thought that was really endearing, and I think a lot of people didn't catch that, but I thought that was important.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Candace. How about this this endearing moment?
But I love this guy right here. Let me give this guy a hug right here. I love this guy right here.
That's really nice.
And then he didn't say I love you back.
Well, then it continued, and it got weird.
Don't f*** with me, all right? Don't f*** me, Sean, not you.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
And then they went to lunch.
Well, did it work? Where's the cake?
It worked, sir. We have the combination.
Great. What's the combination?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
That's amazing. I've got the same combination on my luggage.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
I get it. I like Ray Charles. Mike and I were just having a conversation during the break.
Shh, stop talking.
This is terrible. I mean, the Ray Charles part is good.
Girl, go ahead. Get down.
Oh, okay. K-Mac, take it easy.
I love the song. Semi-running iPod.
No. Go. We're old school rap fans.
This is old school.
No, what are you talking about?
Old school?
We're talking like Run DMC, Kool Moe Dee,
Beastie Boys,
Public Enemy,
Curtis Blow, Young MC,
Sugar Hill. Come on.
That's old school.
That's how Mike Scott and I kick it.
We want prenup. I want that back on. Is that called bumper music?
Let's get a little.
It's so important.
Let's get a little 911 as a joke, and then you'll see. Then you'll see a performance, and you'll see the white Flava Flav right here.
Okay.
All right.
Let's see if there's room in the studio for you to do your little moves.
All right. Well,
don't pull a muscle, but
the stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM560, The Answer. See Heather McDonald, James O'Keefe, and Sheriff David Clark at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Dan and K-Mac in for Amy this morning. Kristen McCreary, Chicago Tribune editorial board. Governor's race in Illinois, Kristen. You wrote a piece seems like a few months ago. It was probably only about a few weeks ago, but this was the...
I can tell it had a great impression on you.
Well, I mean, I just don't remember the time, but it had the impression, this is going to be bad, that piece, that you're seeing the implosion of the Republican Party under Rahner, and you're looking at a midterm that's going to be very bad for Republicans in Illinois, was essentially the gist of it, particularly in the suburbs. Now, that may have changed a little bit because of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing, which of course was unforeseen at the time you wrote your piece, but where do you have a sense of the governor's race with the final debate held last night, as well as the impact on ballot?
I mean, I think the governor is closing the gap a little bit, but he's so far behind in the polls that I mean, it's just, it's almost unsurmountable, but you can see that he's finally looking like he's trying to win this race, where I think for the past 6 months to a year, it just almost seemed like he was just giving up.
Here's his sort of last-ditch appeal, this new commercial, Bruce Rauner to camera.
You sent me to Springfield to fix our state. We've done some good. We've stopped a lot of bad. But like you, I'm frustrated because we haven't done enough. After decades of corruption, change doesn't come easy. We could give up and give total control to Madigan, Pritzker, and the machine that made this mess, or do the tough, honest things to save Illinois. This might be our last chance.
Wow, that was some dramatic music.
It was very enjoyable.
It was like Days of Our Lives in the background there.
Like Sands Through the Hourglass.
Yes, David Foster was really quite moving.
So it strikes me as about half a step above begging that spot. And it's very reminiscent of his wine club buddy Rahm's cardigan sweater spot in 2015 after when he was in the runoff with Chewy Garcia. He puts the cardigan sweater on and says, you know, I know I'm a jag-off. And I apologize.
I rub people the wrong way.
please reelect me anyway. And so we did. Not going to work for Rauner.
I mean, he did have, so he, a few weeks ago, he did his letter or his press conference where he talked about how he needed to take smaller wins. Government is slow. He tried to make that appeal where he sort of admitted to making mistakes.
That was pathetic. I saw that. It's pathetic.
It was just too late.
It was not an apology. It was not an apology for being dishonest. It was not an apology for breaking promises. It was not an apology for stabbing core constituencies in the back repeatedly, Brutus. It was none of those things. It was, I care too much. You know what my problem is? I mean,
I'm
it was
too courageous.
I'm too courageous. Yeah. Too courageous. He has been a coward. He has been a coward because what do cowards do? They betray. And that's what Bruce Rauner's legacy will be. Benedict Rauner. And he's going to go down. I mean, he's, I think, the third most unpopular governor in the country. And that takes some doing to get the better of Dan Malloy in Connecticut. He's going to go down as a failed governor, as a dishonest governor, as somebody who lacked integrity and destroyed himself. All of the wounds that Bruce Rauner have suffered, all the wounds that he has suffered, have been self-inflicted.
I disagree with that. I don't think they've all been self-inflicted. And if you separate out HB 40 and some of the reasons that Jeanne Ives got into the race, if you look back to 2015 when he first got in, there was the Democratic majority was not going to give him a win on anything.
Oh,
anything.
Yeah.
And if you go. No.
Come on.
No.
You've been around this for 25 years.
Yes, I have.
The Democrat majority was built into the price when he was running and when he was elected. So I'm sorry that he didn't understand who Madigan and Cullerton were. I'm sorry that he was so naive and we fell in love with a checkbook he was at a distinct disadvantage and then wouldn't listen to anybody. Because here's the thing. And I've been around Bruce Rauner over the last 3 years. When we were trying to work together on a range of issues, including campaigns. So I've seen him, and I've talked to him, and I've heard him.
As have I.
Yeah, but in a different setting than I have been. Not as an ally, as a journalist. It's different. And let me tell you something about Bruce Rauner. He's never wrong, and nothing is ever his fault. And that's why you saw the excited utterance in December that he's not in charge. Because nothing is his fault. And guess what? For the big, tough, braggadocia businessman who's going to come in from the outside and turn things around just like Tiny Dancer, his wine club buddy. Is that what we got? It's exactly what you said about Rahm, or a version of it. You know, arrogance without resume. That's been Bruce Rauner.
I don't think you can completely discount what he is up against. And from the beginning, even as Governor Rauner came in and tried to build relationships with legislators on the other side of the aisle, even as he tried to build public support, even as he tried to introduce ideas like term limits, like redistricting reform, that 80% of voters want and Democrats refuse to put on
boring.
The ballot.
Thank you. That's exactly. You're making my point for me.
But like, where is your outrage? Term limits
and redistricting reform. That's where you want to spend your limited political capital.
Where is your
cotton
outrage?
Cotton candy.
You had 500,000 people sign petitions for those. Because they do matter.
Excuse me.
Where is your outrage at the Democratic majority that has stifled?
Oh my God.
Everything.
Give me a break.
Any sort of growth that we could have had under Ronner.
Now you actually do sound like a Ronner ally, because that's the only argument they have. Where's your outrage? I'm sorry. I've been in this racket for 25 years. My first Republican state legislative candidate was 1994. So I've been running Republican and supporting Republican candidates against Mike Madigan for 25 years. So for the Ronner people, spare me the moral indignity about who is more opposed to Mike Madigan, okay? Spare me that false juvenile game. Spare me. The opportunity was presented. He earned the opportunity to be governor, and he frittered it away. Be a little bit self-accountable. Grow up, not you, him, and Ronner supporters that have the only thing they have to say is to wet the or do is to wet their beds over Mike Madigan. I understand. Mike Madigan is the approximate cause for the destruction of the state's economy. How many times do I have to say it? Who's the guy railing against the Mike Madigan-inspired property tax system that's made him a multi-cajillionaire and spending millions of dollars of other people's money to try and
But you're still saying, like, there is some way to work with him. And there is not.
I didn't say there was a way to work with him.
You said understand sort of that what he was up against, and you're sorry if he didn't understand.
That's right, he didn't.
What he was up against.
Because that's what he tried to do. And then when he couldn't get anything done, he surrendered. Because that's what playing Pontius Pilate, or when you have the largest tax increase in Illinois history passed over your veto, that's what that looks like. He surrendered. When you have a third of a Republican caucus you're financing vote for that largest tax increase, that's a surrender. He owns that. He owns that as the head of the Republican Party. He owns that because the legislature is going to take care of it. In addition to junk science on gender and sanctuary state and HB 40. He owns those things.
We don't need to rehash those.
We do need to rehash them if you want to spin this fairy tale about Bruce Ronner ran into Mike Madigan.
I'm just saying that you have more of a personal thing with him than the average rank and file voter who understands that he did all of the turnaround agenda that he proposed were actually good pro-business, pro-growth ideas that you have supported, that your candidates have supported.
Competence matters. Anybody can put out a white paper with 45 ideas that all Republicans support when it comes to deregulation and tax reduction.
It was more than a white paper.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? Competence matters. That's why Mitt Romney's not the president, and Donald Trump was. Mitt Romney had a nice 48-point plan for the economy, too. And in the moment when it counted, he shrunk. And in the moment when it's counted every turn, Ronner has shrunk. You think it's personal for me. It's policy. He made this state worse. And he became the most pro-abortion governor in the history of the United States. And he destroyed the Republican Party from within, which is what Mike Madigan can't do. So, yeah. So is it personal to me? Yeah, it's personal to me because of the 25 years I've been working in the party for the party to try and advance conservative reform in the party. The one thing we haven't tried, the thing that Ronner said he was going to try and did not. Fact.
Did not try what?
A conservative reform agenda like those individuals he calls his mentors, Daniels and Walker. And politically, and the people around him, incompetent. State party, a joke. The people around him, buffoons. Buffoons. And so $100 million and 4 years later, what do you got? How's it going? He had all the resources. He has the financial the donor class all aligned. He's got control of the state party. He's got his two welfare queens that run the House and Senate caucuses. How's it going? You have command control of everything and all the cash, all the advantages. And then we come now to your undoing at your own hands. And what's the excuse?
I'm not saying that.
What's the excuse?
I'm not saying he didn't play a role in his own undoing. He certainly did by signing those bills that that you mentioned. But anytime that this comes up, I feel obligated to, having watched this up close, and the very first thing the Democrats did when he barely had his hand off the Bible was file a bill and build a huge coalition against him to reduce his power at the bargaining table with AFSCME, one of the very first things that the legislature did. So,
yeah, and that was defeated.
Barely.
It was defeated. And so?
And so, I'm just saying, there was no, you can't negotiate with people who have no willingness to come to the table with good intentions.
Right. And so what did you write about AFSCME? What should he have done? What should he have done a long time ago with respect to the AFSCME contract? Because you've written about it. We've talked about it in this show when you filled in. How many hundreds of proposals and dozens of meetings, right, do they go through?
Right. 350.
So if you want to really put your ass on the line to change the state, what do you do? What do you do with AFSCME, the state's largest public sector union, state workers, that just gave Mike Madigan $750,000? What do you do with them?
Well, what are you suggesting? Fire them?
Yes.
Okay.
Lock them out. We'll put those state jobs to a market test. You don't think that the average AFSCME salary, $62,000, the total compensation package for the average AFSCME member, north of $100,000 when you include all the benefits.
I think that sounds really great, but I mean, these are people who actually have jobs to, you know, check on children who are abused and neglected and run the prisons and public safety roles.
And we'll start paring down those, you know, you'll use a federal term, non-essential workers to show that we're serious. You want to chop your ranks in half? Let's do it.
Well, he has not approved a contract. I mean, he did not approve any raises.
So it languishes until Fat Boy gets in, and then it gets green-lighted. The sound of one hand clapping. Nothing. Anthony in Plainfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Thanks for taking my call. The one thing that is stark to me is Rauner has absolutely no leadership capacity. All these policies that has been written about and he's claimed he was going to push and promote, they all fell down, but he could still be prospecting for conservative candidates, promoting them into the legislature, build a team that doesn't or can't be effective in the moment, but maybe can move the ball forward in 2, 3, 4 years. He's done nothing of that sort. I wouldn't follow him into a water balloon fight with the kids in the neighborhood. So I held my nose one time and voted for him. I'm not voting for him. Any of my friends and family, I'm telling them vote for McCain.
Thanks for the call, Anthony. J.B. Pritzker's got an ad, too, speaking to his competence. Another issue that was raised by Jeannie Ives in the primary and me, and I will continue to raise it because Rauner continues to lie about it and because veterans in Quincy unnecessarily died because of this administration's incompetence. Pritzker's ad from a family member.
I met my dad at the ER, and when I walked into that room, he was laying in a fetal position, unresponsive. He just looked like he was about to die. It was not the dad that I saw before. At that moment, my dad needed for the state to honor him and serve him the way that he honored and served his country. Nothing was said about Legionnaires. While the state was sending back emails about PR and different things, my dad was dying.
Our team did exactly what they should have done, exactly when they should have done it.
My question to Governor Rauner is, if it were your parents who were living at that home, would you have handled it differently? Would the response time have been quicker? I looked up to my dad a lot. And I loved him, and whatever life he had left on this earth, it was his. And Governor Rauner was more interested in protecting his image than he was the heroes who served our country.
That's Tim Miller, the son of Eugene Miller. Ouch. What about the Quincy Veterans Home?
I'm not going to defend what happened there.
Right. I know. It's indefensible. Turns out that Rauner wants to be everything, and he'll be anything in any moment to try and flim-flam a constituency into supporting him. And that only lasts for so long. And then what you become is what J.B. Pritzker is, which is nothing. And that only lasts for so long, too. So we're going to continue from George Ryan forward having the ignominious designation of the worst governor in America. We've had it for... 1, 2, 3, 4 governors. And we're going to make it 5 on November 6th.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and K-Mac. In for Amy J. She is Krista McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune editorial board. And when we do this story, a story like the one we're about to do, again, stipulating most women's claims of sexual assault or abuse are true. But the presumption of innocence remains and should regardless. For exactly the cases like Seneca Valley High School in Pittsburgh. A group of five high school, quote-unquote, mean girls in Pennsylvania confessed to targeting a boy with false sexual assault allegations just because they, quote, don't like him, unquote. They conspired in person and via electronic communication devices to falsely accuse this young man of sexual assault on two occasions per a lawsuit that the boy's parents have filed seeking unspecified damages. False allegations led to their son being fired from his job at a local swimming pool, and he was then forced to endure multiple court appearances, detention in a juvenile facility, detention at home, the loss of his liberty and other damages, again, according to this lawsuit. He's now being homeschooled and suffers mental health problems. The boy was basically tortured in school by other students and investigators, but the administration was focused only on protecting the girls who were lying, said the family attorney. The allegations were proven false. The first girl who accused him of assaulting her admitted to making up the allegation, saying, "I just don't like him." She justified her decision to fabricate the allegations during a recorded interview with school officials. "I just don't like to hear him talk. I don't like to look at him." The boy was had been charged with indecent assault and two counts of harassment. He pled not guilty, but was put on probation. And later the same year, the same girl who accused him of sexual assault told her fellow classmates that she would do anything to get the boy expelled. That led to a campaign where someone taped the word predator on his back during choir practice. He was hit with another accusation of sexual assault several months later. A friend of the first girl who accused him told the school official he assaulted her at home. The allegations were then backed up by two other girls. This led to the charges. He was arrested at school, spent 9 days in a detention center after being deemed a threat to the community. A month later, the three girls recanted their allegations and admitted to lying about the sexual assault.
This is absolutely horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. And there's a paragraph in here that says the first girl who accused him, just absolutely no remorse. You know, even as he was being detained, he lost his job, he was being bullied. There was a whole campaign to bully him at school.
Right.
No remorse. I mean, that is just, it's like beyond comprehension to me that people could be so evil. And so this is a civil lawsuit against the parents of the girls. And I hope they have to pay dearly.
I'd sue the school, too, based on what the lawsuit describes the school did.
Oh,
the administration
the
focused only on protecting the girls who were lying.
Right.
You have malicious prosecution, perhaps, too. I mean, not getting your ducks in a row before you, move to ruin a young man's life
mm-hmm.
with the allegation alone, much less a prosecution. Thinking about this... do you think the Me Too movement, thinking about this globally, think the Me Too movement, what we've seen the last several weeks from the Kavanaugh confirmation, do you think it's going to engender more of this? Because, of course, the contention from the left is because Kavanaugh was confirmed, now women are going to be unwilling to come forward. Well, do you think so? Or do you think when they see Miss Ford being nominated for a Distinguished Alumni Award at North Carolina and getting $1 million on GoFundMe page, and other opportunities or benefits that may come to her and others. Do you think it'll encourage more of this? Saying, I know I've got this whole infrastructure of people who will believe anything I say and amplify anything I have to say and increase my profile in the process. I think it will lead to perhaps more of this. We also have, amazingly, one of the charges against Harvey Weinstein was dropped in New York yesterday.
Oh, I did not hear that.
A recantation, essentially one of the charges. Now, I'm not saying that this guy is not still the human stain. I think he is. And one charge being dropped out of six charges against him and 70-some-odd women. Okay. But I'm just saying one of the charges apparently was dropped because the woman who had said she was forced into a sex act, there's some evidence that prosecutors came upon, or the defense did and provided to prosecutors, that it was consensual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Have what we've seen from the Me Too movement and most in most pronounced fashion, the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing, do you think it's going to lead to a better place with women being emboldened, who have been victimized, emboldened to come forward, but we still maintain the presumption of innocence and we adjudicate these cases and hold predators accountable? Or do you think we're going to see more excesses where people use allegation as a weapon like these girls did at this Pennsylvania high school?
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that people are not that morally bankrupt, aside from these teenage girls, a few of them minors, that they would do something like that. But I think that the Kavanaugh hearings are motivating the Me Too movement more so than they are motivating conservatives who felt that he was, you know, railroaded. And I see that in a lot of these suburban races that we've been talking about in the Chicago area, where you have Democrats trying to oust a number of Republicans who are, you know, decent conservatives and now being called almost directly in these mailers that the Democratic Party is putting out, almost calling them sexual predators. They're using this sort of theme in a lot of these mailers that are just as over the top as I have seen in all of my years of covering campaigns.
Speaking of false allegations.
Exactly. But they're sort of using this now as a campaign tool. And I think it's ginning up, and I don't think it should, but it's ginning up the Me Too movement in that if you've had anything happen to you, if you had an inappropriate comment made to you, if you had a boss who made you feel uncomfortable, if you have been assaulted, if something happened to you in high school, all of that emotion got wrapped up into the Kavanaugh hearings wrongly. This was about one person, one accusation against him that in most people's mind was credible, and yet it turned into just an absolute media circus, which I find to be just worrisome. It was dangerous. Can you believe? I still can't believe that at a Senate hearing, there were actual questions to a Supreme Court nominee about his yearbook and about the things written about other girls in his yearbook. At what point do we all realize that this has gone completely off the rails? And it never happened. I also was sort of torn, not torn, but watching immediately after Dr. Ford left the table, before Kavanaugh even sat down, all of the I believe her comments from people in the media in D.C. and around the country who would be covering the story, already weighing in before he even had a chance to sit down.
Yeah.
How do you say that, given all of that, this couldn't happen again?
Well, of course. So why wouldn't people be encouraged to do what these girls did, who are thinking, as teenagers do, about themselves and nobody else and what they want and when they want it and how they want it? And if I have to destroy somebody I don't like, then that's just what I do. I mean, it's not quite Mean Girls, like in terms of putting people in the grave. But as Brett Stevens opined in the New York Times in defense of Trump, in defense of Kavanaugh, rather remarkable op-ed from a never-Trumper, was talking to one of his friends was, I'd rather be charged with, I'd rather be accused of murder than sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so the presumption of innocence that was so quickly discarded by Democrat members of the Senate, by the D.C. press corps, by the cultural Marxists of the left. Well, this is where that goes, to Seneca High School, Seneca Valley High School. There's no presumption. And by the way, this has been going on college campuses for some time until Betsy DeVos and the Trump Mattress Girl at Columbia. The Rolling Stone story about UVA that was fake. Duke lacrosse. I mean, we've had false accusations here against Cardinal Bernadine. Remember? I mean, look, so the presumption of innocence turns out to be important as a legal standard, but also a cultural norm, not necessarily in a formal legal proceeding, but say, for example, in the way a school investigates a claim.
Right. I mean, think about how this would have rolled out for this boy. This girl came forward saying, the first one saying that he assaulted her in a swimming pool, and then a few weeks later that he assaulted another girl at a home, and there was other girls who came forward and said it was true. Imagine how they were embraced and coddled. And, I mean, this went to the state's attorney's office, obviously. This kid spent time in juvenile detention. Can you imagine if you were his parent? It's just, I like to give teenagers a lot of rope because your brain is not developed as a teenager. That's why they do impulsive, stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
But this just seems so evil. I can't imagine. I just can't imagine being that vindictive that you would watch this unfold and watch him be tortured and just allow this to unfurl.
Yeah, well, and it's a sort of a reminder about the nature of man and woman. And lovely young things can do terrible things, too.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the presumption. I could just go back to this again and again. It's what the Edgar County watchdogs do in this state to root out corruption. Two simple questions. Who says and what proof do you have? Who says and what proof do you have? You're telling me something? Well, who's saying it and what proof do you have? The presumption of innocence when you're talking about allegations that can irreparably alter slash harm a person's life. Is that too much to ask as a cultural norm in addition to a legal standard? I don't think so. This case kind of points it up. Chuck in his car. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, hi. Good show. What about the criminal ramifications? Why aren't these girls charged just as strongly as the boy was, you know, for what they did in false accusation? And also, I thought there was statute of limitations only on murder. Why is there not statute of limitations on these charges where you can go back 40 years? People die. Witnesses, and you can't prove a case sometimes because your witness may be dead by the time they charge him.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Chuck. I don't know if the prosecutor's office in this area in Pittsburgh is looking at this case, criminal charges against the girls or not. They should be.
I'm guessing. So this story just broke, and it's catching on like wildfire. Even though all of these incidents, I think, happened more than a year ago.
17. Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if a little public pressure comes to bear now and that you might see some charges for these girls.
And in terms of like statute of limitations on other crimes, I mean, yeah, the Montgomery County, Maryland, and this is an interesting thing about Ford, too. She could still file a report today about what she alleges happened to her. There's no statute there on that, and it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and it's interesting that she's chosen not to. Darren in Valpo.
Hey, good morning. I was wondering if President Trump would have nominated Amy Coney Barrett, what would they have stooped to discredit her? And if that is his next nomination, where are they going to go if it's a female nomination?
Yeah, thanks.
I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
Thanks for the call, Jared.
I don't know. Does the dogma live within her deeply?
Yeah, right.
I mean, they'll find something.
I think that's it. I think for Amy Coney Barrett, who's now in the Seventh Circuit, it was telegraphed during her confirmation hearing for the Seventh Circuit by Dianne Feinstein, again, about her Catholicism informing her life. And that was the famous, right, dogma mm-hmm. lives
yeah. your faith,
loudly within you.
Your faith is used against you.
Right.
Against a woman who Didn't she adopt a bunch of children? And
yeah, they have like seven kids.
Yeah,
and
some from Haiti
adopted.
Or something. Right? Yeah.
So she'll be tarred as some kind of theocrat who wants to institute Catholicism as the national religion or something like this. Because one thing we've learned is that the left is without shame.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Quickly, Joni in Hyde Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, hi. I'm listening to your topic today, and it's great. A couple of weeks ago, I read in the paper that the Innocence Project exonerated a man, I think in Washington State, from 50 years in jail. He was convicted of assaulting or raping a minor, and it turned out that she was lying. And it was a funny story because the girl said that he threatened to kill her dog if she told anybody about what happened. And apparently he supposedly killed the dog, but that was not true. They found the dog in another state. And
oh
this is
gosh.
All, you know, like I said, he was exonerated by the Innocence Project. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Joni. Appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, again, presumption of innocence. Who says and what proof do you have? Is that so hard?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
This is music. Kanye West, not so much. Stevie Ray Vaughan, so much. See the difference?
I'm trying.
Yeah, this is what you should be listening to when you're running. Oh, by the way, you mentioned you like to listen to Kanye when you run. You ran the Chicago Marathon.
Well, I ran about 18 miles of the Chicago Marathon, and then I stumbled for like the last 8 miles. Yeah.
You should have been playing this music.
I should have.
For inspiration.
I was doing a little Neil Diamond while I was running. I know, I have terrible taste in
no,
music.
I like Neil Diamond.
A little Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Trying to, you know, dig deep. That's what runners say. That's runner lingo.
Dig deep.
You know, you gotta dig deep those
How about
last
like,
6 miles.
I would have done like Hero of the Day, Metallica. That's motivational.
I do a little Van Halen. I wouldn't go as far as Metallica. I don't like that like in my head, but
Chariots of Fire.
It was my time was terrible. I'm stumbling around today. Mike Scott thought I had like back issues. I'm like, nope, just, you know, if you want to get the sensation of being in a really bad car accident, run the Chicago Marathon.
Are you the oldest person to ever complete the marathon?
I was the caboose for sure.
Did you beat Oprah's time?
I didn't even come close to beating Oprah's time.
Seriously?
I didn't. No, what? I had an injury, so then I had to like deal with that.
Oh, you literally like hobbled the last 8 miles?
I did.
Wow, well that is sort of a heroic
kind
tale.
It works with this background music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's going to play you in the movie?
They were literally like taking down the finish line as I was getting there. I'm like, wait, where's my banana? It's a long way to run.
And now those silver blankets too; those are cool.
I got the blanket. I got the medal. One free beer. They give you a free beer.
Oh.
And then I stumbled over to get a ride.
What motivated you to do that, if I can ask? Because it just doesn't make any sense to me.
You know, I was running with a running group, and I just decided to. I wanted to see if I could do it. So. It's.
All right. What's next?
One and done.
Everest?
Pub crawls, I think, is in my future. That's
sure.
It. I'll just keep doing pub crawls. That I can handle.
All right. Very good. Well, congratulations on that. I think I lost my segue to Kanye, but anyway.
Let's just take calls on marathon stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us I want to hear about your chafing.
You know what's...
your blisters.
You know what's even more exciting than watching people run? Just talking about people running. All right, let's talk about Kanye running for president in 2024. That was among the 43 topics that Kanye West covered in one long stream of consciousness that ran about 20 minutes. And again, of course, like the person he was addressing, he's playing 27-dimensional chess in a parallel universe. So, you know, I can see the point up front that you just don't understand. But Kanye West and Jim Brown to the White House. And remember what the left is saying about Kanye West is best exemplified by the man who proved Donald Trump's description of him as the dumbest man on television, former NBC 5 field reporter Don Lemon.
Kanye West is what happens when Negroes don't read. And we have this.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny.
Really gross. I mean.
Jim Brown, Don? What about Jim Brown? He was there, too. One of the things that Kanye said that seemed to resonate with both the president and Jim Brown was this.
What I need Saturday Night Live to improve on, or what I need the liberals to improve on, is if he don't look good, we don't look good. This is our president. He has to be the freshest, the flyest planes, the best factories, and we have to make our core be in power. We have to bring jobs into America because our best export is entertainment and ideas. But when we make everything in China and not in America, then we're cheating on our country. And we're putting people in positions to have to do illegal things to end up in the cheapest factory ever, the prison system.
He should have just stopped. If POTUS doesn't look good, we don't look good. That was sort of the key line, but he was not able to contain any comment to one sentence and then get reaction.
No, I almost feel there's a small part of me that feels guilty that all of this was just caught live because he does sound sort of manic, right?
Wasn't that Vidal Sassoon? If you don't look good, we don't look good. Is he plagiarizing Vidal Sassoon like he plagiarized Ray Charles?
I don't know. I'll look it up for you.
I think that's right. All right. Well, all right. We'll give him a pass on that, especially because Jim Brown's here. Now, Jim Brown, everybody's focused on Kanye. Jim Brown sat there for 25 minutes listening to Kanye, a couple comments by Trump, and just Jim Brown, who's just a very direct, succinct on what he has to say. He just said this. This is all Jim Brown had to say.
Well, you know why I'm here? I'm here to serve.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I'm not here to ask for anything. I'm here to contribute.
And you know, that's always been the way Jim has been for a long time.
It's true. I mean, and even Jim wasn't even allowed to get that word out without being talked over by Trump.
It was Vidal Sassoon.
Yeah, thank you.
That is your recall is just weird sometimes.
It really is. It's strange. You know why? Here, let me explain this to you. My brain very much like Kanye's brain, so I'm just going to let him explain our brains to you.
I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I was connected with a neuropsychologist that works with the athletes in the NBA and the NFL, and he looked at my brain. It's equal on three parts. I'm going to go ahead, drop some bombs for you. 98 right. percentile IQ test.
Yeah.
I had a 75 percentile of all human beings, but it was counting 8 numbers backwards off there is repeating, so I'm going to work on that one. The other one's 98%, Tesla, Freud, you know. So he said
that
I actually wasn't bipolar. I had sleep deprivation, which could cause dementia 10 to 20 years from now, where I wouldn't even remember my son's name. So all this power that I get, and I'm taking my son to the Sox game and all that, I wouldn't be able to remember his name from a misdiagnosis.
Misdiagnosage.
Yeah. And he's going to get some ideas for big pharma that are money-making opportunities or something. That was one of the tangents he went off. I mean, there's so many rabbit holes he was going down. It's difficult to follow. But there were a couple of things that were overriding in what he had to say to the president. And one is about criminal justice reform and about Chicago crime. So Jeff Sessions recently weighed in on Chicago crime per this state and local consent decree that the politicians here are trying to engineer to micromanage police that the Department of Justice and the Trump administration want no part of. And Trump has previously said one thing that he thinks police should bring back is stop and frisk. Well, Kanye don't like that.
No.
That the head of the police and Mike Sachs met with me last night at the Soho House about feel that stop and frisk does not help the relationships in the city. And everyone that knew I was coming here said, ask about stop and frisk. That's the number one thing that we're having this conversation about. Another thing is opening up industries, and we've got to get some tax breaks to, because, you know, we're making, we got a speed factory in Atlanta, but the shoes are costing us $300, so it's costing us too much to make things. So we need some prototypes here so we can get people back working, so China can't just beat us and Vietnam can't beat us. You got Levi's, the greatest jeans company in the world, making their jeans in Vietnam. So we're going to need to get a few breaks to be able to have some places in my hometown of Chicago, in the 2.7 million to the 9 million surrounding suburbs.
It really spun us around the globe pretty quickly from stop and frisk to jeans in Vietnam.
The name dropping. I was at Soho. I was at Sox Park. I was doing that. I mean, yeah. Do we give him more rope because he is an artist? They tend to be a little scatterbrained. Their brains are, you know, he's a genius, and so it's hard for him to focus on one or two things.
Sure. There's a lot bundled up there that he wants to get out. It's not just ideas on crime. He's got a Super Bowl idea for this this hat. He's got a Make America Great hat. He dropped the again. And he'd like to see President Trump come to the Super Bowl wearing his hat, MAG hat, and somebody else as sort of a moment of national unity. Here's, listen to this idea.
I made a hat that says Make America Great, just that. But I would love to see, at the Super Bowl, Trump wearing the Make America Great hat, Colin wearing the Make America Great, and showing that we can bend a bit on this side, we can bend a bit on this side, and we can learn how to be malleable in the infinite universe that we are and the loving beings that we are, mm-hmm. that we don't have to stick to all traditions. And we aren't a side. We are one unit. We are one country. We are one moment in history and time. We might have been here before, but right now we're here together, and our greatest value that people have are other people.
I mean, some of those words just don't really go together.
I think in a previous life, Kanye West was Dennis Rodman.
Yes, there are a lot of similarities. He did actually bring a hat for Trump that just says Make America Great.
Right. That's the hat he has to wear to the Super Bowl, and he's going to get one to Colin Kaepernick, and then Kaep will wear his to the Super Bowl, and then they'll have this,
everything will be fine.
This moment, like Kanye and Trump had this kind of moment.
But I love this guy right here. Let me give this guy a hug right here.
Oh, you. Come here, you knucklehead.
Give him a noogie.
Yeah. Really
don't mess with the hair. Yeah, he just said that's really nice. He didn't say I love you back.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
All right, Ralph and Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Hey, you know, look, I'm not going to dispute Kanye's IQ or anything like that, but it does cast some doubts on some of his intelligence because he married into the Kardashian clan.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's a judgment thing. He is a smart guy that lacks discernment.
I have to
agree.
There
you go. Thanks for the call, Ralph.
It really is a strike against him, right?
That is a good distinction. You can be smart but lack discernment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a good distinction. I like that. Also, he wants Larry Hoover out of prison. For those of you who don't know, don't recall, Larry Hoover is the founder of the Gangster Disciples. He was like the Chicago gang kingpin until he was sentenced to 6 consecutive life sentences that he's now serving out at some supermax prison in Colorado. But Kanye has a different view of Larry Hoover.
Larry Hoover is an example of a man that was turning his life around. And as soon as he tried to turn his life around, they hit him with 6 life sentences. So I believe you say don't tear down the statues. Larry Hoover is a living statue. He's a beacon for us that needs to see his family, that needs to go out and represent.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep a list of all the topics he touched on. He could really, for all of his money and smarts and power, why didn't he have a PR person or a communications person or somebody kind of work this out before you just sit down and barf out all of these ideas to the president?
Do you think that somebody could wrangle him any more than somebody can wrangle Trump?
It would have been worth a try.
I don't see it. Mark in Plainfield.
Good morning, Dan and guest host.
Chris K-Mac is her
that's
name.
That's all right. Guest host is good.
Yeah. She has a name.
Anyway, instead of ridiculing Kanye and Trump, I think you guys should be congratulating him because he's actually reaching out and trying to solve problems. And okay, maybe Larry Hoover doesn't make sense. But, you know, he's talking about domestic manufacturing, tax cuts, bringing the father back in the Black family. And maybe they didn't articulate it as well. But maybe someone who can speak better like you did could articulate for him instead of just ridiculing him. And people should be proud that Trump is actually trying to reach out to the African-American community instead of the liberals lying all the time that he's racist just because he happens to be a white male Republican with money.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Thanks for the call, Mark. I mean, look, he had some moments where he said some things that were important or I mean, not novel, but it's important because of who's saying them. But he just kind of couldn't stick on them for more than 6 seconds, like, for example, this.
And that's a move. One of the moves that I love that liberals tried to do, the liberal would try to control a black person through the concept of racism because they know that we are very proud, emotional people. So when I said I like Trump to like someone that's liberal, they'll say, oh, but he's racist. You think racism can control me? Oh, that don't stop me. That's an invisible wall.
So, you know, to develop that a little bit more, that's good. That's going down a productive path. So, no, I'm look, I have great respect for Jim Brown. So I'm glad Jim Brown was there. I'm glad Jim Brown continues to do what he's doing in a very understated and dignified way. I would have liked to hear more from Jim Brown than Kanye West if I had my druthers, but that's okay. So, no, I'm fine with the sort of spectacle of it all. I'm just sort of curious where it goes. Does this just become sort of a lurid sideshow part of Trump's celebrity circle, or is this something where Kanye can be cogent enough for long enough to actually change some minds? I don't know the answer.
I think he could. I mean, he didn't. We're not really ridiculing him. We're just, you know, he did talk in circles. He is a smart guy. He's had some sort of awakening. I appreciate that he is running against the current here. It's one thing you mentioned earlier for Taylor Swift and all these people in Hollywood and celebrities to comment on politics because it's always on the left. So that's a safe space for them. Great. Pat her on the back. I'm glad you're not voting for a Republican. What he's doing actually takes a lot of courage. I mean, he is getting whomped by the mob, being called an Uncle Tom for even entertaining the idea of black voters leaning Republican or giving Trump a chance. And I still remember what Trump said at the Republican National Convention when he talked to black voters directly. And I think he was referencing even Chicago violence. What have you got to lose?
Yeah, right.
Look at how it's going for you in these big cities, total Democratic control for centuries. You have high unemployment. You have high crime. What do you have to lose? Try me out. And I thought that was sort of a compelling message. I don't know how much of the black vote he ended up getting, but he could.
8%, I think.
How much?
8%.
Kanye has a huge platform. He has a big audience, and it can't hurt. I mean,
the only thing I would say, I agree with all that. The only thing I would say, though, is just be careful. You know, I've made this point before. Conservatives have this this penchant to grab on to things that we don't have and elevate them and sort of sometimes forget our standards. So Tommy Lahren is a good example. Oh, a good-looking young blonde girl could be our spokesman, and so let's elevate her. Let's put her on TV because she looks good on TV, and let's everybody listen to what Tommy Lahren is saying because she's repeating sort of surface-skimming talking points of conservatives. And then Tommy Lahren, you know, embarrasses herself when she tries to tackle the life issue and other instances because she's a child and because she hasn't read the book. She's just parroting some of the lines. So I know you want young people. You want to say, look, young people are coming over to the conservative movement. But obviously we want that. I want that to happen. I want black families to come over to the conservative movement. I want Hispanic families to come. But I'm not going to just abandon standards for anything that, you know, glimmers, right? Not everything that glimmers is gold. So Candace Owens, too, I think she's very uneven. Her criticism of Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell, Shelby Steele, is idiotic. Idiotic. So, yes, it's great. I want young black women to be spokesmen for the Republican Party, to be candidates for the Republican Party. But I'm not going to abandon all standards of knowledge, talent, ability, good judgment. And so it's sort of the same thing with Kanye.
Yeah. I mean, he sort of was speaking as though this was all new information, you know, that Levi's are made in Taiwan and we need jobs and jobs to actually help fight crime. And if we don't have that, then people go to prison. Welcome to
learning
government 101.
Yeah, just because you just found out about something doesn't mean that everybody just found out about it.
I was really enthusiastic about points that are pretty well documented.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, K-Mac, Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune Editorial Board. Kristen, I know you probably have one of those big guaranteed seven-figure defined benefit pension plans over there at the Chicago Tribune. So the last couple of days, seeing the market pull back 5%, that more than 1,000 points, that had to make you a little jittery.
You know, I'm just counting on taxpayers to bail me out of my defined benefit plan, so we're good.
All right.
No, it was, I mean, some of the
headlines. The order of the day, yeah.
Some of the headlines were describing this as, you know, the abyss, that this was extremely dangerous. Now, of course, it's already bounced back a little bit today, right? Tech stocks are starting to rise, so we're pulling back from the edge.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that. I'm a little worried.
Yeah.
I was looking the next couple of days, and you know, I have my exit strategy plan like anybody else, and I mean,
might make you stay a little bit longer
if this continues. Yeah, I mean, I might have to work another 6 months, and that's not part of the plan.
You don't really work, though. I mean, let's be
honest. Right, hardest working guy you know works 20 hours a week. For more on this topic and what the future holds, we look into the crystal ball of Scott the Cow Guy, Scott Shalady, Fox Business contributor, joining us now. Scott, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
No problem.
So you seem very calm, which is good.
I'm just counting on those four taxpayers that are left to help bail Chris
yes.
out what she needs.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get out before her pension comes due. Scott, what are we to understand from the last 2 days, and what that means for the last 2 months of the year?
Well, I would say the word is velocity. We have to really keep an eye on the velocity of any rate increases, and that's what scared the market, and obviously then the velocity of the downturn in asset prices. We've had a great run. You know, the last two or three days have been kind of difficult for us here because it's really just been a story of excuses, and nobody really cares what the excuse is. But I will say this, there's no new news out there that made the market do what it did. It was just this a little bit of a lemming-slash-herd mentality that began to start to take some their chips off the table because, you know, since Trump was elected, the high, you know, we had from the low to the highs, it was around a 45% return on the stock market. Now it's around just over 40. So if you're about to retire, and I would have told you less than 2 years ago, you'd see that market rally 40%, 42%. I mean, you'd be stupid not to take some of that money off the table, you know, before you kind of left. And those are the people I think that really were in the crosshairs here, because the ones that are actually either, you know, retired or about to retire were the ones that really had to make a move. But ultimately, the numbers are 4.2% growth, 3.7% unemployment. You know, we've got some good fundamental underlying economic news. So arguably you could say that maybe people got a little nervous that things were too good, or, you know, when's this all going to end? But at the end of the day, the U.S. economy is the bellwether right now for the rest of the world, and everybody else wants to be us.
So you don't think it was Kanye? He was just so he made everyone very jittery. let's throw that in his basket too.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is such a minefield to go down that shaft to talk about Kanye West and Donald Trump. I'll probably just stay away from it, but it's interesting to say the least.
So you don't think that the announcement that the president is going to meet with the Chinese president at the G20 summit that calmed some fears? And
well, if you want to do a play-by-play, yesterday at around 2:30 Eastern time, where there was a wall of selling equity-wise. But it was, you know, it's just some in some part, it was stemmed by those folks that had seen that news and were thinking that, hey, this could come to an end. And that's the very reason why this is almost going to be like a binary event. And it's very difficult to trade a binary event because, you know, I believe that this won't take as long as people think it's going to. I don't think the president's got the patience. You know, he's an action man. He's not a man of attrition. And so you want to make sure you're in the market and invested when it does, because that's really the main thing that's been holding the market back, if at all. And I think that when it finally does come out, look what we got happen. Look what happened when we got the Mexico news and the Canadian news. It's going to be good for the market. And there's so I just got off the phone with a big hedge fund in New York, and there's so many people in New York that have missed this 40% rally since Trump was elected because they didn't like him. They voted with their hearts and they didn't vote with their heads and missed the rally. So there's so much dry powder on the sidelines still that needs to get in the market. And as we get closer to the end of the year, that just is going to ratchet up the pressure on those guys to perform. So it'll be interesting to see if we get some good news on top of the fact that a lot of guys have missed the move. Whew.
What about Trump's jawboning the Fed? And, they're wacko. They're loco. They're loco over there at the Fed, Scott. And does it potentially signaling that he doesn't want to see another rate increase, even though they're scheduled?
I just think it's hubris. I think it's just a stake for the likes of Mr. Sean from Elmore Park. You know, give everybody something to talk about. But it doesn't mean anything. So.
Okay, it means something only to unhinged conspiracy theorists. Is what you're saying. Okay,
exactly,
I got it. Perfect.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
What about the prospect of earnings reports in the fourth quarter being, and there, you know, there's a lot high expectations for earnings reports. If they don't meet expectations, then can we see a second dip?
Well, I think things are looking pretty good, so that wasn't really the concern on the street. I think the street was worried about forward guidance. That was what everybody was talking about over the last 3 or 4 days when we lost this 5 or 6% in a couple of days. It was, we think earnings will be good, but we're worried about what they're going to have to say about things going forward. So, you know, they could probably, you know, take a little bit off the top here, but at the end of the day, it's still hard to argue with the real numbers, what's been really happening to the economy. And we can take a little off the top because things are good, but at the end of the day, again, we're the bellwether. People want to be us. We're raising rates, our economy is growing, and we still don't have that real huge threat of inflation.
I wanted you to get back to the point. You were saying you were in New York, and there were a bunch of people who kind of stayed on the sidelines and missed this growth spurt. And is this the moment now when you anticipate that they will get in and get back in?
Well, it's an opportunity. Things are on sale, right? I mean, just because we're up today doesn't mean we can't be done on Monday. It doesn't mean we can't finish lower today. But if you are under the gun and you have to perform, and, you know, you're lucky that the S&P is going to be only up, you know, 3% on the year probably by the end of today, you don't have as much catch-up to play. But if you've missed a huge opportunity, they're going to have to put some money to work. And as we get closer to the end of the year when we, you know, they have to post and let their customers know what they've done, that pressure ratchets up. So, yeah, I know a lot of cases where, and this happens to a lot of people in more than just money, they've missed the boat because they voted with their hearts and they didn't vote with their heads, and just, you know, take the person out of it and look at the product, and it's pretty compelling.
Mm-hmm. How do you, I may or may not have a little bit of my retirement planning in Facebook that I think they did creep up a little bit. They're still dealing with all of this misinformation activity. Any updates on where that stock is at?
Creep is a good description for Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan. Facebook and MySpace, I think, are a lot alike. But I would say this. You can break those tech stocks into two different groups, right? They're not just one group now. So the social media part of technology, I think, will struggle going forward because of the fact that they didn't regulate themselves well enough. These governments, and Europe's a great example of it because they're doing it really, they're more, much more aggressive here in London than they are in the States. They almost think that they're the arbiter. They're the ones that are going to have to start really keeping tabs on these people. But I think that the social media part of that tech sector is going to struggle because they're going to come under much more scrutiny and or new regulation, just like, you know, the revolution, you know, the workers' revolutions in the 1930s and 40s. It's going to be government-led.
So in terms of kind of recalibrating one's portfolio, is there anything that you would recommend in the wake of the last 2 days people should be at least thinking about taking under advisement?
Yeah, I would relax. You know, the modern portfolio theory of money management won a Pulitzer Prize in the 1950s. And basically that was a theory that said you just can't pick them. You have to be fully invested and kind of balance your portfolio out to your risk parameters as you get older, right? The older you get, the more bonds you own, the less stock you own. And I guess everybody knows the regular ratio of, you know, whatever your age is what you should have in bonds. So if you're 30, you should have 30% of your money in bonds and 70% in equity. And obviously, if you're 50, it's 50-50. But that's a pretty easy rule of thumb, and I think that still holds true. Because you know what? You could have bought the high in the stock market every year since 1929, and you'd be a billionaire.
And so the moral of the story, Kristen, don't be a hero. Just,
I like to stay calm.
Slow and steady, right?
Stay calm, yeah.
Slow and steady.
Stay calm.
There's more reason. There's more reason to be concerned about a stock market that goes up for no good reason than one that goes down for a few good reasons.
Nice.
All right.
I'm going to remember that.
Boy,
I'm going to tattoo that on my arm.
He's got the cow guy. He's quick with the aphorisms, that guy. He's like the life's little instruction book of financial advisors.
There you go.
Scott the cow guy's got you, lady. Fox Business Contributor. Thanks for calming our nerves. Appreciate it. And he joined us on the Turnkey Debt Pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and K-Mac in for Amy, Kristen McQuarrie. And Kristen, you hail from Rockford.
I do indeed.
Well, math is visiting Rockford, and it's going to be visiting a lot of other places around Illinois in the very near future. This report filed by the Rockford Register Star, here's the lead sentence. The city should consider shrinking its police and fire departments, closing a fire station, and selling its water system to avoid running out of money in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a report that consultants retained by the city of Rockford presented in terms of advising Rockford on how to make the numbers work for city government.
I mean, so Rockford is a little bit of a unique story in that it has always struggled. It always has had a higher unemployment rate than the rest of the state and in many cases the Midwest.
Since manufacturing left,
but really healthcare has been a big part of the economy there.
Mm-hmm.
The residents will tell you that the city is just very divided. You have a booming east side and a west side that's been kind of neglected. People are tired of paying for taxes. It's one of the only, I think it's the largest city in the state that does not have home rule. So residents are saying no more. So it really does restrict the mayor's ability to balance a budget because he can't do what a lot of other home rule communities can do. But the bottom of all of this is that for years, 80% of the city's budget has gone to the public safety sector, both pensions and personnel. And the previous mayor went to Springfield repeatedly begging for help because the labor management contract rules that are written in state statute tie his hands tremendously. Prevailing wage ties his hands. All of these things that state government could do to make government less expensive at the local level, they won't do because the unions control Springfield. And this is the result. And it's not just that they're going to have to close public safeties, fire stations, etc. The housing stock is just, you wouldn't believe, every other house in some of these really nice neighborhoods in Rockford for sale for years because they have a property tax bill that's like $15,000 in a community that's not like a go-to place. It's not like people are flocking to Rockford. So
I'll tell you what, they're not flocking to anywhere. And Rockford is obviously worse off than the next hamlet we'll discuss.
I love this one.
But the idea, this from Cranes, the idea that Lake Forest, Tony Leafy, high-income Lake Forest, cobblestone roads.
Manicured lawns.
Cobblestone boulevards. I said roads.
Yes,
they're not boulevards.
They are boulevards. Yes. Mercedes-Benz in every driveway.
They have launched a marketing campaign to attract home buyers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Welcome home campaign. Videos on the city's website, ads and publications like Cranes and Sheridan Road Magazine. Going to spend about $100,000 over the next 3 years to market Lake Forest to attract home buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Does that tell you anything, everybody?
You should see these ads, too. They are reminiscent of the Think Michigan ads. You know, they have like these aerial shots over Lake Forest and lovely people making flower arrangements and... Yeah, they're having to sell their town because I'm sure they're uncomfortable with the housing stock that is sitting there, which is sitting there because property taxes are through the roof, and people can't make good on their homes.
For example, let me give you an example.
Sure.
Next door in Lake Bluff, Richard Marks.
Hold on to the night. Go ahead.
Oh, my God.
Hold on to the memories.
That song is so awful, but I'll tell you what. That's a better version than Richard Marx sings. So congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Richard Marx, you think we talked about Scottie Pippen. Obviously, Jordan's place in Highland Park will never sell. You might as well turn that into Michael Jordan Museum. We talked about Brian Urlacher, can't unload his place in Mattawa. Kirk Heinrich had to take an absolute hammering to get out from underneath his place in Bannockburn when he moved to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Richard Marx put his house in Lake Bluff, right next door to Lake Forest,
it's
for
really
sale.
Really beautiful.
It should be. $18 million was the price tag in 2014.
I snooped.
4 years on, unable to sell it.
Hmm.
Imagine. Gosh, I wonder why.
Hmm.
Now he's relisting his place. He listed 4 years ago for $18 million. $9 million. $9 billion.
Not too many endless summer nights in his new place, apparently. He doesn't really live there, right?
This no, just... he's in. I think he's in Aspen with Daisy Fuentes, isn't he?
Yeah.
Mm.
I stalk her, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yep. Moved on from the Dirty Dancing star to Daisy Fuentes. Mm-hmm.
So why? These stories we're telling you, Richard Marx, all the other high-profile names that we've talked about in this show. Lake Forest launching a campaign to attract home buyers. Rockford, Kristen mentioned about police and fire pensions. Why do you pay the highest property taxes in the nation? Why can't you or anybody else sell their home for anything approaching the adjusted for inflation price you paid for it? Illinois Teachers Retirement Fund paying out more than $164 million to 86 new beneficiaries who saved a collective $5.7
million.
86 teachers.
A little unbalanced there. Can you say those numbers again?
86 teachers
mm-hmm.
Being paid out their retirement. They're mm-hmm. newly retired. They've mm-hmm. retired in July and August of this year. Began collecting their pensions. They collectively, these 86 people, put $5.7 million into their pensions.
Over the course of their careers.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they are going to receive $164 million back.
Okay.
So that is, a little back of the envelope math. That's basically a 30X return on investment. Is that what you're getting at your job?
Well, you know, I did get like a 0.002% raise a few years ago. So I'm not going to complain.
Right.
I am not going to be one of those people.
How dare you? How dare you? So, for example, let's see, what's a good example here? I mean, every one of them is a good example. Jacqueline Roche, by the way, PrairieStateWire.com, I'll tweet it out. Jacqueline Roche in Waukegan School District 60. During her career, she contributed $127,000 to her pension. Total earnings, $1.38 million. She'll, for the $127,000 she put in, her projected all-time pension payout is $1.8
million. Mm-hmm. Well, and they will say, of course, they made pension payments. I don't know if she was in a district where actually taxpayers did the pickup. But investment returns for all of these systems were predicated on what, like 8% a year, which, of course, they didn't do. So this is, like you say a million times, this is a math issue.
Math.
This is not an anti-teacher thing.
Yep.
It's just math.
And it's just your home. It's just your life's savings and investment. That's all. That's the only thing at stake. So, hey, pay it no mind.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. See Heather McDonald, James O'Keefe, and Sheriff David Clark at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Yeah, we're going to see Heather McDonald October 27th, Freedom Summit. And Heather McDonald's up next. But more teases from the wide-ranging interview of First Lady Melania Trump by ABC News that airs this evening. A couple more questions they teased out to get your interest, and I'm interested. I am kind of interested in what Melania has to say about the range of topics they discuss, including why she's taken up the issue of cyberbullying. She started this whole campaign against cyberbullying and teaching, you know, particularly young people how to comport themselves on social media.
I could say I'm the most bullied person on the world.
You think you're the most bullied person in the world?
One of them. If you really see what people saying about me. That's why I, you know, my Be Best initiative is focusing on social media and online behavior. We need to educate the children of social emotional behavior so when they grow up and they know how to deal with those issues.
You know, what's interesting is that she didn't sound dissimilar to Michelle Obama, who was on the Today Show yesterday. And Michelle Obama did not echo the sentiments of one Eric Holder.
She did not.
She did not echo the sentiments of one Hillary Clinton. She sort of doubled down on her now infamous they go low, we go high formulation.
What would you say now about your motto? Do you think it still stands when they go low, we go
absolutely
high?
Fear is not a it's not a proper motivator. Hope wins out. And if you think about how you want your kids to be raised, how you want them to think about life and their opportunities, do you want them afraid of their neighbors? Do you want them angry? Do you want them vengeful? You know, if we think of the values that we try to promote to our children, Savannah, you're a mother right now. And at this point, you have to think about what are the things you're telling your girls? Which motto do you want them to live by? And I have to think about that as a mother, as someone who's a role model to young girls. We want them to grow up with promise and hope. And we can't model something different if we want them to be better than that.
Well, yeah, okay. I'd have a follow-up, though. Savannah didn't offer this follow-up, but I would have if I
was on the couch.
Was on the couch, yeah. That'll never happen. But what about sort of mob mentality? What about the presumption of innocence? What about the mean girls phenomenon, as it were, like this case we talked about earlier in the show out of this Pittsburgh high school where these girls conspired to falsely accuse a young man of sexual assault? What about what we've seen there? What about teaching your girls and your boys about the presumption of innocence and about independent thinking? Do you agree with that as well? Or do we believe somebody, give somebody the benefit of the doubt solely based on their race or their gender? I would love to hear Michelle Obama's answer to that in the context of what we've seen over the last 3 weeks. For more on that topic, we're pleased to be joined by Heather McDonald, contributing editor for City Journal, author of the bestseller, The War on Cops. And she's written a good piece about Me Too as well. You can find it at City Journal. Heather, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on, Don. Great to be with you.
What about this week where in the aftermath of the Kavanaugh confirmation, we've heard from Hillary Clinton that, look, I'm happy to be civil as soon as you give us congressional majorities. Or from Eric Holder that if they go low in our estimation, then we kick them versus what you're hearing from the former First Lady and the current one.
Well, I think it's somewhat hypocritical on Michelle Obama's part because her husband's administration was perpetrating the type of identity politics that is leading to such civil unrest and the threat of violence in our society coming out of the academy. You have a concerted effort to teach students to hate each other, to hate the greatest works of Western civilization based on the trivialities of gonads and melanin. You know, the schools are starting really in K through 12, but it reaching an absolute crescendo of frenzy in universities, talk endlessly about toxic masculinity and white privilege. Whites are portrayed as the, especially white males, as the source of all evil the globe over. And you speak about due process. Obviously, that victim ideology, this poisonous identity politics, is now taking square aim at our fundamentals of justice with the Believe Survivors mantra, which presumes guilt on the part of the accused, presumes innocence on the part of the accuser, and the assumption that the accuser deserves unquestioning credulity on the part of observers. This turns our system of justice upside down and places power in the government that I would think anybody with any knowledge of history would be very reluctant to place.
I was really your recent piece on this is really powerful, and it reminded me a little bit the way that you end it, kind of turning it back to women, a little bit of what Kellyanne Conway said when she admitted to Jake Tapper that she had been a victim of sexual assault, and she said, "You have to be responsible for yourself. You're responsible for your own conduct. Judge Kavanaugh, Jake Tapper, not responsible for what happened to me." And you say in your piece how our booze-fueled hookup culture has made relations between men and women messier than ever, leaving many girls and women with pains of regret, but those regrets do not equal rape. Could you talk a little bit more about that part of the story that never seems to really get covered?
Well, we are not living through an epidemic of campus rape. The facts speak for themselves. If that were the case, we would have seen a stampede to create single-sex schools decades ago where girls could study in safety. Instead, every weekend they continue to troop to frat parties. So there's not rape going on, but what there is going on is a sordid scene of drunken one-night stand hookups. The girls drink themselves blotto precisely to lower their sexual inhibitions. This really appalling scene of casual promiscuity is the direct outgrowth of sexual liberation, which was founded on a lie. And that lie is that males and females react identically to casual sex, they have identical sex drives, and that both males and females desire as many no strings attached couplings as possible. That is not true. Males and females have different sex drives. The male libido is voracious, the female more selective, and females have emotional responses to intercourse that are much more frequent than males, which isn't to say that males are completely unaffected emotionally, but on average, females produce hormones after intercourse that lead to a sense of emotional bonding. What happens on college campuses frequently is the girls sort of see the guys around campus seemingly completely unaffected by their drunken hookup, and they feel regret, they feel resentful. Sometimes it's a case of, well, the girl has cheated on her boyfriend with this guy, so she lodges a rape complaint to try and get herself off the hook. But all of these instances of regretted sex that are then converted by the massive Title IX bureaucracies into phony rape accusations, they are nevertheless can be disquieting. They could all be avoided completely if girls returned to the traditional values of prudence and modesty. You follow a few simple rules. You don't get drunk. You don't get into bed with a guy you barely know and take off your clothes. If you do so, you're setting in motion a set of primal processes that are going to be hard to undertake. And that goes for boys, too. I, frankly, don't have a heck of a lot of sympathy for these guys who are falsely accused of rape, because they, too, could avoid any risk of false rape accusations by themselves reintroducing themselves to the traditional norms of gentlemanliness and chivalry. Instead of seeking to, you know, have a one-night stand with some drunken girl they've met, walk her home, walk your girlfriend home at night, kiss her goodnight, and write her a love poem at 2 a.m. All of this is completely preventable if the girls and boys exercise some prudence and foresight.
My love is like a red, red rose that's freshly sprung in. Okay,
I'm taking notes. This is like therapy for her.
No, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, but I want to go back to something you said. You know, I get what you're saying, the boorish conduct in both directions. But with respect to the Me Too movement and the sort of cultural norms that are being propagated by the media, if you're saying that masculinity is toxic, then why won't we see more false allegations? Because what's wrong with a false allegation? The person that you're targeting is inherently bad.
Well, I'm not saying that it's toxic. I'm saying that males have a strong sex drive. That is not
toxic. No. I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm saying what the left says on campus, the toxic masculinity, rape culture narrative of the left. If you're going to, the left, if the left is going to promote that, then why wouldn't it encourage people to make false allegations? Because you're making a false allegation against somebody who's inherently bad.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And we've had, commentators on the left basically say that, is I don't care if this is correct or not. Males have it coming to them. I mean, that's been one of the responses of virtually every phony racial hate crime hoax that gets, questioned. The race advocates say, well, it doesn't matter whether it happened or not because it could have happened, and therefore let's do another, 10 million of diversity training on campus to fight this phantom racism. So, yes, we have, again, it cannot be overstated, Dan and Kristen, the campuses are teaching people to hate. They are using these broad categories of guilt and innocence. They're teaching students to think of themselves as victims on a college campus, which is delusional. There has never been a more tolerant environment in human history, at least if you're not a conservative, than a college campus. It celebrates the very characteristics that are still the cause for stoning and possibly death in many places across the world today. And yet students come out of those places believing that they have been victimized by circumambient racism and sexism. This is crazy, but they are carrying that chip on their shoulder into the world at large, and that is what explains the insanity that we have lived through for the last 3 weeks with the Kavanaugh hearings and the screaming banshees discarding due process and trying to dredge up every possible completely lunatic accusation against Kavanaugh on the theory, as you say, Dan, that anything a male does is by definition toxic.
She is Heather McDonald. You can catch her wisdom and insights at our Freedom Summit October 27th. Get to more information at our website. Get tickets. Heather McDonald, contributing editor for City Journal, the author of the bestseller, The War on Cops. Heather, thanks as always for joining us. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Dan. Look forward to it.
Take care. She joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.